This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast, number 108. And as you can see, there are two sets of the two Ronnies on the screen, and we've got a special guest. You have to watch this on YouTube to get that joke. We've got a special guest today, ladies and gents. We've got Roger Green with us, private investor, semi-retired as well. I'm going to find out his whole story. We're in for a treat with this particular one. And obviously, I've got my co-host here, Henry Viola Hare, which you can find at HT Viola on Twitter, and my, well, professional co-host, you know, City Gent, Alex DeGroot at DeGroot Media. And you can find Roger, by the way, at Roger Green 2009. Very interesting character. We're going to find out about him after we find out very quickly what Alex has been up to and what Henry's been up to. Can we start with Henry? What have you been up to, fella?
Oh, wheeling and dealing, Peter.
Ducking and diving.
I've just had a week off, would you believe? So my colleagues were all heartbroken. You know, the ladies in the office were all crying and in floods of tears. but we had a very nice week. We did a little bit of touristy stuff around London. So we saw the Tower of London, saw the Ravens. We went to see the musical Hamilton. We went round the HMS Belfast on the River Thames. All awesome activities. If anybody is in or around London, I can recommend all of them.
Brilliant.
Came back to work, found they'd not blown the office up or burnt it down. So, yeah, I'm in pretty good spirits.
Very good to hear. And that Hamilton play is brilliant. I must recommend it to everybody else as well. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, morning or afternoon, guys. I was at Headingley last night in Leeds for the cricket. So I saw Harry Brook get a big ton in the 100, playing for the Northern Superchargers with the kids. And if you like your cricket and you're not a purist, I would definitely recommend the 100. Although it's not everybody's cup of tea. We had a cracking night in Leeds and some very good cricket. So school holidays still ongoing for us with the kids. Market's a bit subdued. We'll talk about that in a sec. Hoping for a sort of late summer blast of sunshine, really. Been a bit drizzly in this neck of the woods. But yeah, all good, Pete. Thank you.
Very, very good. And I'll have to ask Roger, before we start interrogating you, mate, what sort of week have you had?
Well, spirits move with the markets and with the football results. So it's all been downhill the past week or so. But it's been a good week. Played tennis a couple of times. So as long as I'm not looking at my share portfolio, all's good.
All's good, but I must touch on, you know, before we start, about the fact that you are a certain particular football fan who've just been promoted to the Premier League. So you could have quite a difficult year, but we'll get into that a bit later, probably, yeah?
Okay.
Should we save that a bit later? Okay,
let's save that one.
Right. Lovely to have you on the show anyway. Right, I'm going to quickly just do briefly the markets. We're here 2 weeks ago and we were talking about the markets closing at 7,587 for the FTSE 100. And I was having this conversation with Alex about it being trapped in this converging wedge and we needed to push out and get as far away and distance ourselves from support, which was at 7,400. Because if the markets were tepid or we had a difficult September, we didn't want to be just slicing through ice, slicing through butter very quickly down to 7,400 and below that. And heaven forbid we get moderate sort of news from the US, we get a bit, you know, negativity on the market, sentiment goes, and we actually touched 7,223 on the 18th of March, August, less than a week ago, last week, 7,220. I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go again. Fortunately enough, and I'm trying to work out what the positive sentiment was today myself, the FTSE closed up 0.68%. At some stage today, it was at 7,348, which was the high of the intraday high. and we closed at 7,320, which isn't bad, but we need to just keep nudging. I was saying earlier to Alex, I'm hoping the Nvidia news is that comes out later tonight is good. That gives us a little bit more of a push in the markets across the UK. FTSE All Share still slightly below the 4,000 mark, closed today at 3,994. That was plus 0.77% as well. FTSE All Share still sitting there. FTSE AIM All Share at 7,334. Again, still way below that 8,000 number. We need to see that climb significantly before the year end. Lots of people are getting quite despondent regarding the AIM market and what's been going on there. But I think we've got to take into consideration as well, quite a lot of companies have left that and been promoted to the FTSE. Obviously, quite a few have been delisted, and that's why these numbers are down at the levels that they are in comparison to where it started. I think it started, was it 900, Alex, or 1,000 it started at?
Would it yeah, 900 AIM? Plus, yeah. 900,
okie dokie. Yeah. So, any thoughts, gentlemen, Alex, Henry, with where the markets are going, what's been happening, and why?
Yeah, I mean, for me, August is always going to be a quiet month. So can't reiterate that enough. Participation levels relatively low. Having said that, you know, I think we're still getting a bit of a mixed bag in terms of company numbers. Massive warning from Crest Nicholson, which probably speaks for most house builders. And then today on the macro front, some quite weak PMIs. Which sort of suggests that the Q2 print we had on GDP was a bit of a false dawn, a bit of a red herring, suggests that the UK economy is sort of grinding to a halt, which I guess is no surprise given we've had, what, a dozen interest rate rises back to back going back 18 months. So sooner or later, that would kill demand, and that's what's happening. The flip side is, of course, weak PMIs probably suggest that we are getting towards the end of the rate hiking cycle. So that's possibly a silver lining for most equity investors. So as you'd expect, really, Pete, you're getting profit warnings because the Bank of England's trying to kill demand, and it is killing demand. Cab payments, which floated on AIM 2 months ago, we talked a little bit about this on various other pods. Cab payments is trading, what, 80p below the issue price? That's the only meaningful UK IPO this year, I think, certainly in the last few months. And we've had a number of payment stocks getting whacked internationally, PayPal and Adyen, which is a Dutch company. So, yeah, I mean, lots of, you know, lots of ups, lots of downs. I mean, for what it's worth, my general thesis would be, in the UK at any rate, if the market begins to think that rates have peaked and going to start contracting again, then stock markets will respond positively to that. And we're getting the sort of profit warnings which indicate that the monetary policy tightening is working. Seems crazy to talk about it working when, you know, companies are savaging profit expectations, but that's the way it does work. And as you said earlier, Pete, Nvidia will give us a bit of a steer on their performance trends. To me, it still feels as though the market in the States is hot for AI and hot for tech. I don't see that changing as a theme in the second half. And we've got some news on ARM in the last 24 hours about the IPO, I think. So, you know, that may also give the UK a little bit of a tailwind. But overall, really, the US continues to lead everything, doesn't it? And we in the UK, I mean, if you haven't got exposure to the US as a UK investor, you know, you need to look at yourself, really.
Cool. Thank you for that. I think everybody misread that this morning. When I saw the weak PMIs, I initially went, oh, here we go. And we're already quite low. You know, and I thought, oh, we're going to have another red day. And then obviously, like you said, the interpretation is that, oh, maybe that's the end of the rate cycle now. So people started buying. And at one point today, I think the FTSE was up 1%. The All Share was up 1.2 or there or thereabouts. And I thought, oh, crikey, okay, I've completely misread this. But yeah, interesting that the market interprets negative news as positive news. And yeah, and all the rest of it. Any thoughts there, Henry?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, to be honest. I mean, my general feeling is that there is just a real weakness in the market. You know, we have got persistent down days and significant drops. I'm losing, you know, a percent and a half fairly regularly on a daily basis now. in certain positions. The house builders, Press Nicholson, I think, was the latest to report. There was a string of fairly positive updates. So I've got Vistry, for example. They were quite upbeat in their report. That was a few weeks ago. Press Nicholson have come out and the mood music has significantly changed. I saw a comment from somebody on Twitter, Donuts R Ace, who works in the construction industry. And he was commenting on the fact that he was listening to two of his colleagues on a building site talking about how several of the big listed house builders now are, you know, really starting to look quite ropey. They're shutting down sites, they're ceasing all work. He's not named names, so I can't pass those on. This is purely anecdotal, but the feeling is that the housing market is slowly starting to seize up, to be honest.
Yeah, I know an individual, I know that Mrs. and the hubby owns the whole Shibboleth construction firm. It's quite a large one. I say large, regionally large one. And they're thriving, but the people around them who haven't budgeted and having a certain amount of money in the kitty for this slowing down period, they're laying people off already. And they're seeing other companies that they used to work with and jointly with going out of business. So, yeah, I think the listed ones that we've got, the ones that we talk about, the Persimmons of the world and the Barretts of the world and so on and so forth, I think, you know, a lot of people looking at the yields and going, that's a juicy yield, that's 6%, that's 7%, that's 8%. Those prices are going to go lower. Yeah, I've been watching the Persimmon price and there's that support level at about 10 quid. And I was speaking to Phil colloquially a while back. I said, Phil, just watch that. It's at 12 quid right now. It's going to go sub 10 quid. It's going to go sub 10 quid at some point. And when this market decides that enough is enough, and as Alex says, we start to go up and everything's priced in, I think the house builders, again, are going to be absolutely phenomenal investments to make. And the reason I'm saying that is because we've got a government that wants to stay in power, and we've got a government, or sorry, we've got another political party that wants to get in power. And I think they'll start tweaking what they're going to do because we've lost the scheme to support how, what's it called again?
Help to buy.
Yeah. Exactly, that scheme, just lost it for a second there. So the help to buy scheme. So I think if they do something over the equivalent of that, off they go again to the races for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. So that would be an opportunity, I think, for some of our investors. Roger, what do you think about it all? What's been happening? The FTSE, the
yeah. Painful markets. I saw Brigitte Murray mentioned on Twitter the AIM index was down something like 43% since the beginning of last year. If that's the ocean you're fishing in, you're really going against the tide. It's a really tough place to be investing. I mean, Alex mentioned PMIs. The US PMI was like 50.1. The S&P Global PMI, I think, was 50.1 today. So very edge of expansion versus recession. So not a good situation. And I was very depressed earlier in the year when we were seeing, not clinically, just using it as a phrase, but we were seeing there's good news, a bit of good economic news, and then everyone's saying, oh, that just means interest rates are going to go higher, so let's mark everything down. It would be, I still worry there's just a pessimistic take to the markets, and we'll take the negative out of anything. So weaker economic activity, oh, that's really bad, so we'll take the negatives there, rather than saying maybe we are at the top of the cycle. It does turn you into something of a pessimist, I think, the way we've been seeing things recently.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's the reason why there are going to be more and more people in the sort of situation where they agree with and move towards a sentiment which Alex has got or has had for some time about diversification and investing in the US stocks and stock market, as well as having a toehold in the UK markets, because we keep saying this about this home bias thing, but 90% of the individuals I speak to that are involved in small caps, they're all in UK small caps, and some of them are obviously listed in the FTSE, but a majority of them are listed on AIM. And as you said rightly, AIM has had a spanking for the last X amount of years. So if you were not got any exposure to the US, you're actually going to be underperforming every year. you know. So we'll see. But we're doing all this chat. We've not even fully introduced you yet. So, Roger, welcome. Semi-retired Roger.
Thank you.
Chemical engineer. Not clinically. I'm just going to point that out.
Yes.
I'm joking. Right. So what I'd like you to do, Roger, is just introduce yourself. How long you've been investing, why you got into investing, so on and so forth. Then we'll get into the mix regarding portfolio. We can't obviously give you advice. We're not here. You know, we've all got glasses on, but we're not clinicians or doctors here to heal. So share. Go ahead.
Yeah, I am a chemical engineer. I went to university, did chemical engineering. So from Sheffield originally. So that's a clue on the football. That narrows it down to a 50-50 for you. Went to university, studied chemical engineering, used to design chemical plants, and then moved into the consulting side of the industry. So I worked through to 2019 and then thought I was retiring. In fact, I did retire. And then COVID came along. So two things happened. COVID took away a lot of the other things I could be doing, a lot of the fun stuff. The tennis club closed down, the football matches you couldn't go and watch. So a heap of stuff that I wanted to be doing, I couldn't do. Also, I discovered full-time investing wasn't as exciting as I thought. It's a bit like the diet of chocolate biscuits. It sounds fantastic, but then probably on the third packet, you start to think, actually, I've had enough of this. So it was something that, although I enjoy doing it, it's not something I could do all the time. And then work opportunities came along, so consulting stuff. So I do bits and pieces, advising in the chemical industry, some stuff around mergers and acquisitions, which ties quite nicely with the investing. So I hope my investing makes me a better advisor to people when they're buying and selling companies. And as for getting involved in investing, I think it's almost lost in the mist of time, actually. It goes back to, I mean, I'm a kid from Sheffield who had no idea what the stock market was. No one at the comprehensive school in Sheffield says what you want to do is be a stockbroker. It just didn't exist, all that stuff, to me. It was engineering and it's proper jobs. And there was these things happening that I understood nothing about. I remember one teacher in the sixth form talking about unit trusts and trying to explain how they work. And I didn't get that at all. And then at university, I got friends who had investments in things and they were talking about dividends from shares at a couple of percent. And I'm thinking, I mean, back in the 80s, I'm getting 10% in the building society. Why are you messing about with this stuff? So there's a lot of stuff I didn't understand. And then there were the privatization waves. There's all the so there's BT and there's British Gas and things. And so I became more aware of opportunities to be involved in things. And I slowly started to dabble as I started work, had some money, started messing around, losing money on things, buying Morgan Grenfell, was it? All going pear shaped on me, looked too good to be true. And as they always do, it was too good to be true. But then gradually grew into it, making regular savings, regular investments through PEPs and ISAs. So we got into the tax-free stuff, started to build something of a portfolio. And that was going great. It's not when you're adding every month. I mean, these low markets are fantastic. If you've got money to put in there, it's great. Now I'm in this situation where there's nothing, or there's a limited amount flowing in. We can spend everything that comes in through the door. So there's no new capital to go in there. So that makes the market a bit tougher. So those of you who are busy in a job, saving money every month, these are great times to be investing. It won't feel like it, but trust me, in 5 years, 10 years, you're going to be sitting on that. These are the golden days when you should be pumping the money into the market, because there's a lot of bargains out there. We just need a catalyst to kick it off.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I carried on. With retirement, I then, most of my company pensions were defined contributions. So they were just pots of money sitting there in some Aviva standard balanced risk fund that was doing nothing. So I took control of that, moved that all into my SIP. I persuaded my wife to cash in her final salary pension. I'm not giving advice, but don't do this. Especially not if it's your wife's. There was a golden opportunity.
That's why I went like that. Ooh, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, indeed. She's a hard taskmaster, I have to say. But there was a window where gilt rates were so low that the buyout value of these things was fantastic, and you needed, I needed to get something like a 4% return to do better than leaving the money invested in the final salary scheme. With a tailwind, normally I would expect to do considerably better than that. So I have my SIP, I have my wife's SIP, I have my ISA, I have my wife's ISA, and a couple of investment accounts outside of that. So my portfolio is a bit of a tangle in terms of numbers of accounts. And so the elephant in the room is I've reduced my number of holdings considerably recently. I'm down to 91 holdings now. So I'm slightly disappointed that I've busted the 100.
We're going to get into that number a bit later on, but I need to interrupt you at this stage and just ask you this, because one of the things I wanted to ask immediately when you started, and I've waited a little bit longer, we're going to get into the numbers a bit in a bit. I've got some questions from Alex and asked some questions from Henry. Was when you started investing, did you have an investing goal? Because you said that you retired just around COVID, but then you came back. Was retirement your goal, or what was the goal that you had?
I think it was small increments to start with. It's sort of, if I get to this level, then I can have a new car. If I get to this level, we'll move house. So I was going stepwise. But then there was a point that, yeah, I think I need this to retire on. So that was a goal. Obviously, I've hit that and retired. So no particular goals now, other than sort of legacy supporting children, making sure I don't run out of money. And I think I'm more cautious than, I mean, most people have a retirement pot and just resolve to spend it through the rest of their days. I'm trying to have enough income coming off the portfolio that I don't actually eat all the capital. And of course, the great mystery is how long we've got. I mean, it might be 10 years, it might be 30 years. And there's a very different requirement for those two amounts. So it's a tricky calculation.
Exactly. I'm going to go to Alex first and ask Alex what he's got for you as a question, if you're ready, Alex.
Yeah, sure. So Roger, are you mentioned income, but are you prizing income above capital growth, or is it sort of equal? Or can you maybe give us a flavor for how you start your filtering process, either at the company level or the fund level? Is it income? Is it capital growth? What can you give us a steer on that, please?
Yeah, so there are sort of two parts, possibly three parts. You mentioned funds as well. So I'm reasonably heavily invested in funds, which is a bit of a legacy of having some big pension pots to invest all of a sudden. And I wasn't going to plow those into AIM stocks or whatever. So giving Terry Smith at Fundsmith a big lump of cash was a relatively safe bet at the time. And Fundsmith, as an example, has done very well. So I've left that there. So there is a fund part. But I want those things to invest in things I don't know about or I wouldn't be investing in. So I've got some Blue Whale as well, and they hold NVIDIA. I've no way of analyzing NVIDIA. But if Stephen Yu says it's a good investment and he's prepared to invest in it, then that takes me somewhere I wouldn't go. So I like funds to be looking at stuff I wouldn't have any competence around. I like them to be different. Dividend, I do like a dividend because that means whatever else happens, as long as the dividends are sustained, I've got enough dividend coming off the portfolio that I can live comfortably. So that takes away a whole level of stress. That's the sleep at night factor. So I've got a fair amount of dividend heavy stuff in there. But from an investor point of view and an enthusiast point of view, all of that is desperately boring. Mm-hmm. And growth stocks, I mean, we'd all like to find more 10 baggers. So I'm still interested in finding growth stocks as individual holdings. I'm much more interested in small companies, companies with some nice character and family ownership and things. Puts a different time scale on the investment. You're not quarterly reporting or whatever. You're looking after your auntie and your nieces and nephews who want the business to be running for 20 years. So I do like that sort of characteristic. But small dynamic businesses for it's almost fun around the edge of the portfolio, I would say.
Thanks, Roger. That's very clear.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Roger. I really appreciate that candor. Henry, what questions have you got for our good man, Roger, here?
Well, got one question for you. So you've mentioned you've got 91 holdings, I think you said, which is an awesome number, by the way. You know, I can't even get my head around starting to manage that many. But what I'm curious about is how you've picked those 91. So you mentioned you've got some funds. Presumably you've got some individual holdings. You prize income over growth, etc. But what's your kind of valuation methodology? How are you picking these holdings out?
Yeah, that's a good one. So, I mean, part of the diversity of holdings, some of it is things like bonds. So on the income side, I've got some corporate bonds where the risk. So the risk is digital. The company goes bust, I get nothing. Otherwise, I get the coupon. So they're high yield, but there is a small chance that the company goes bust. So I've got quite a lot of small positions in corporate bonds. So that tends to multiply the numbers up. I say funds, I mean, some of them are big holdings. So Slater, Blue Whale, Fundsmith come to mind, or small cap specialists. So Herald, I rate sort of Katie Potts at Herald very highly. So liking the manager, I mean, I rate Gervais Williams, Premier Meissen very highly. I don't actually hold his fund. The challenge is he's constrained by the market. If small caps are not the place to be, he's got nowhere to go. So I'm sort of trying to steer a path into a bull market where I might actually have a better outcome. And then, I mean, I don't like pre-profit companies. I don't like resource stocks that I don't understand. I mean, a mining stock, the apocryphal, it's a hole in the ground with a liar standing next to it or whatever for a mine. So I try and avoid that type of stock. I need things to be fairly simple so that I understand them. So somebody who makes something, takes a raw material, transforms it, makes it into something and sells it. That's about the level I can get to. So I like manufacturing stocks, but it's not always the smartest thing to be in the UK market. I do have a home bias. I'm quite sure I'm much more heavily invested in the UK than elsewhere. And I think that's a bit of a legacy mindset that I have. I mean, there was a time, I mean, your costs are in pounds, your earnings are in pounds, you're living in a pound market. So investing in pounds all made sense. But the UK market's becoming less and less significant globally. So probably as Alex would testify, the US is the place to be for a large and deep stock market that's and a very vibrant economy, far more vibrant than anything you're going to see in Europe. I'm quite sure.
Indeed, I think the important thing is that you recognise that now. You know, I've got your top 10 in front of me, and you've I'm not sure if this is in the order that it is in, but this is your top. What's in within your top 10? Fundsmith Equity Class 1, Imperial Brands, LF Blue Whale Growth, Slater Growth, City of London Investment Trust, M&G PLC, Royal London Sterling Extra Yield Bond, British American Tobacco, so that's two tobacco companies there, Legal & General, and Phoenix Groups, and two insurance companies there. So that's a nice blend, I think, regarding income, growth ops, and, you know, and an investment trust that makes up 38% of your portfolio. So you can play around the edges then. You can look for those little small micro caps and small caps that possibly could do well in a bull market. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I think when we've met and we've had conversations, you've almost gone like that. When someone's asked you how many stocks you've always gone, because to everyone else, well, not to everyone else, a lot of people, that sounds like a lot, you know, numerically. But I always say it depends on what the portfolio is worth. You know, it's about size. If you've got $2,000, that you've got two stocks, one stock. If you've got $200,000, that should be a minimum of, say, 20 stocks. But I know some people have got £1.5 million in their ISA, and they've got 8 or 12. And I'm going, all you need for two of those stocks to get walloped, and all of a sudden you've got a headache for a week. You know, you've got a cricket bat round the head to use Alex's what he was doing in Leeds the other night. And you don't need that. So I think it's important to have the diversification. And as you say, it's about being able to sleep at night. You know, investing is not about being on the treadmill every single day, running to keep going. It's about being able to enjoy life, go away, walk away, and not to be worried about it. And yes, we've had a difficult 22, we've had a difficult 2023, but we're not measured. Our wealth isn't measured in what we've exposed to the markets over an 18-month period. But as you can see from despondency on Twitter and the lack of people on Twitter at the moment, they've all gone, yeah, see you next year. I'm not bothering with the market. It's got too difficult. It's always been difficult. You know, there's been periods when it's been easier, but this is what makes investors, I think, when we're learning from our mistakes and difficulties of markets. And as you've rightly said, Roger, it's a brilliant opportunity now to be a stock picker and pick the stocks that are going to do well over the next 12 months. You know, thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, just a little anecdote, actually, guys. I mean, just sort of professionally speaking. So one of the companies I IPO'd 3 years ago, Irish software business called Glantis, was never a very big company. IPO'd on AIM at 102. Just announced a recommended offer at 33p. They're selling themselves to a Finnish software company called Basware, Baswarre. Basware is owned by KKR, private equity company. So Glantis basically do accounting software, and their sort of call to arms is that they will, you know, you don't need so many back office accounts clerks because you can plug your data into Glantis. It's a sort of SaaS type story. Floated at 102, had a pretty tough time in 2022. Things didn't go very well. Share price tanked a bit. And really, it was looking like a bit of a, you know, it was tough on AIM. No liquidity, no real interest, no institutional interest. Shares were stuck in a rut. Management and staff owned a reasonable slug of the stock. So I think they have been sort of, in a way, they've been bailed out by Basware coming along, making a play at a reasonable premium, and now the company will be delisted and AIM will lose another stock. How many times on the pod have we talked about AIM delistings? And I guess the point I'm making is basically that there was a whole raft of companies that listed on AIM 2 to 3 years ago, before the war, before the Russia-Ukraine war. And the hope was that out of that cohort of 50 stocks that listed on AIM, 10 or 15 would grow and would compound in value and would attract new investors, including retail investors, including Roger and the likes of Roger, and including fund managers who were looking for new interesting stocks. Problem is, 2 to 3 years later, quite a significant number of that cohort are being delisted because they're being taken over, they're being bailed out by white knights. In this case, Basware. So AIM, unfortunately, is not replenishing itself. AIM is declining in terms of the number of companies. And I think that does create reputational problems. And I think it probably puts off some of our retail investors and most of us on this pod, because we want to invest in exciting new companies. But actually what happens is, frankly, sometimes they have an accident, they have a slip up, shares get whacked, and ultimately all that the company can then do is look to get off market, is to look for a corporate that can bail them out. And what board, let's be honest, what PLC board is going to say no to a takeover at the moment? I mean, we've seen so many companies delist this year in the London market, and I'm really hopeful, but not that confident, but really hopeful that this will not be the case into next year, into 2024, because we've got to make London a more vibrant market. And, you know, otherwise home bias is going to look like a mug's game, because we're investing in a market where everything is just losing value. So I guess that anecdote of Glantis being delisted, what I'm trying to get across is that they needed to get off market because the company needed to grow, but the AIM market was no longer doing it for them. They now have a future, but as part of a bigger company. And that's a shame, I think. And it's a shame for the people that obviously held the shares at the IPO. So we know that Jeremy Hunt, and we know that the government behind the scenes are trying to get things going. We know that there's some energy behind a bit of a revival, but the proof will be in the pudding. But I do think it's important that we have a vibrant junior market. And it feels to me at the moment as though we don't. So a theme we've talked about on previous pods, but I think it still remains relevant.
No, that's a very, very good point. Very, very, very good point. I wanted to ask Roger if he's got any exposure, got a certain, you know, any sort of spicy sort of stocks you've got down there in the small caps or on AIM, you know, that you could just put a bit of life into Alex, you know, boost him and say, look, I've got one of yours, Alex, you know. What have you got down there in the small end of the market, Roger? That you're willing to admit to, by the way.
One of the blind spots I realised I have actually is market cap. I'm not always aware of the market cap of the companies that I hold, which is quite dangerous because sometimes you realise the things are really smaller than you had appreciated. What's at the spicy bottom end? I like Bango, the payments company. Yep. So it's marginally profitable at the moment. Bought out the Docomo mobile payments business for an absolute song. Is in a very strong position, very much in a growth phase. So I'm quite excited by that. I think the opportunities are all ahead of it. So that excites me. In terms of individual stock, I like Surface Transforms, the carbon ceramic brake manufacturer for cars. That's a market dominated by Brembo in Italy. And Brembo is worth like 4.5 billion euros. Brembo is huge. So the market opportunity is huge. Now, Ferrari are never going to switch their brakes across to Surface Transforms, but there's a lot of companies out there that would like a viable alternative. They're in a tricky rollout phase where they're expanding, they're selling. They seem to be good at selling and signing up OEMs. Getting companies on buying their brakes and manufacturing effectively to keep up with that seems to have been their challenge. So they're in an investment phase, and they've had sort of some technical issues, sort of teething trouble getting the kit working. But they're slowly catching up with the orders. So that's an interesting one, but it's been interesting for a while. And these things tend to take the thing that you think is going to be good in 2 years' time. 5 years later, you're there thinking, this will be good in 2 years' time. They seem to take a bit longer than you might hope. That's probably about as spicy as it gets for me.
It's a very two very interesting companies. I know quite a few individuals that like Bango. I think I know one other person that's got Surface Transforms. And I think it's an interesting market. Like you say, they've got one dominant player. If somebody wants, you know, obviously the concern I would have, and probably I think Alex would probably have as well, is that because it's technically quite a small company, somebody, a larger entity, just go and it'll become a bolt on, and we'll end up losing another company. That's of a small cap sort of era. You know, have you heard of either of those, Henry? Either of those companies?
Bango, I have. Payments processor, I think. Yes. I've not heard of Surface.
Okay.
I mean, I think the risk on both of those is they could get taken out. But the risk is Bango, rather than actually achieving its potential and its full value, is some other payment platform. I mean, to PayPal, it would be loose change. I mean, someone else could nip in there, buy it for 30%, 40% more than where it's at today. And the doubling, trebling, the multi-baggers that we all aspire to could get destroyed by that.
Yeah, I listened to a webinar. I got invited to this very exclusive webinar once with all these significant individuals across in the tech space and all the rest of it. And it was one of the guys on there was the CEO of Bango. And I was, you know, when you ever listen to somebody who just speaks in such a way that you just go, and he was just absolutely phenomenal. I think if I was to put, you know, I'm going to get held to this, I know, at some point by somebody. I think he would want to navigate. He's one of them that wants to navigate the markets and actually carry on doing what he needs to do regarding Bango. And he will be one of those that's very reluctant to sell. He wants to grow Bango in its own right. And I was saying this 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I still think that's true. So I'm hoping that, you know, that will remain the case long term going forward. Because I think, like you say, got a lot of potential, and they've been investing and investing and investing for so long. You know, it's time for them to just reach that takeoff curve. Yeah. And some people say they've already taken off because the share price has multiplied over recent years. But I think there's still a lot more to go there. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Roger, we're going to take a quick break here. I'm going to go to our good friend Henry, and he's going to share with us. I'm not sure where in the world he's going to go today, but, you know, he likes to travel. You know, he's of the, you know, Italian heritage. So where are you this year, this week, this month, this day, Henry? Which stock have you got for us this far?
We're with an American company, but it's got a Mexican theme. So,
oh, I know where you're going. Go on.
Chipotle Mexican Grill. The ticker is CMG. So,
okay.
Lots of our listeners are into retail brands. They're into restaurant businesses and shoe businesses and card businesses and who knows what else. And so when I was doing a little bit of digging over in the US, I started looking at this business called Chipotle Mexican Grill, which is a £40 billion company that owns and operates Chipotle Mexican Grill restaurants. And these serve Mexican-style food, or a take on Mexican-style food. So we've got burritos, burrito bowls, tacos, salads, that sort of fare. They've got approximately 3,000-ish restaurants across the US, Canada, the UK, France, and Germany. So big, big, big business here. Revenues of about $8.5 billion. Now, the interesting thing about the company, most restaurants are fairly stable businesses. So you buy food in, you have a chef, they prepare it, you've got waiters, they take it to the table. The margins are slim, the rents are high, they're not necessarily great businesses. But somehow, Chipotle Mexican Grill has managed to quadruple their return on equity from about 12% in 2018 up to 44% last year. And they've also tripled their operating margins over a similar period. So I started looking into how they'd manage this. And from what I can see, they seem to be pioneering lots of different self-service and automation and robotics type tools in the hospitality industry. So recently, they introduced a robotic prototype to cut and peel avocados, and they managed to reduce the prep time for their guacamole by 50%.
Wow.
Which might not sound like a lot, but over 3,500 restaurants, you know, if you save 30 seconds a dish and you're serving 10,000 dishes, apparently this adds up to quite a lot. They've also innovated some sort of dual-sided grill fairly recently, which cooks 70% faster than the average employee. And they've rolled these out across their 10 highest volume locations. And these were just two of the recent headlines about the company. And what this said to me was that this is a business that isn't just serving tacos and burritos and salads and so on. They're actually trying to change the way that restaurants function. They're actively looking at their high volume locations and trying to get more customers through the door, faster, better experience, higher, more reliable quality type experiences. And as a result, they are rapidly growing their operating margins because they're becoming vastly more efficient as time goes on. So that's a company that readers might want to go and do a bit of research into. You know, if you like your hospitality retail type businesses, that might be one you want to go and take a look at. The ticker's CMG.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Thank you for that, Henry. And if, you know, obviously we've got lots of people that are fortunate enough to be able to afford to have avocado on toast, so they might be familiar with that company. Have you heard of that one, Roger? Have you dined at Chipotle?
I haven't. I think Mexican food is one of my least preferred cuisines. I have to say the refried bean should never have been fried in the first place. So I'm possibly Oaxaca aside, actually. I do like Oaxaca. It has a few shades of Chiquitos, which I seem to remember as a not very attractive sort of thing my daughter would be keen to go to with her friends, and I wouldn't enjoy it too much. So I'm not a big fan of the cuisine. But the story is interesting because that has echoes of the McDonald's story where they changed completely the way of delivering. So lots of places selling burgers at the time, but that by streamlining the whole process, that suddenly became a very profitable business. So I can see, clearly lots of people like Mexican. And if you can take the cost out of that, I mean, generally food service, I mean, if you make pizzas, the cost of the flour and the tomato and the cheese is nothing compared to what Pizza Express charge you for a pizza. So they're pretty high margin businesses. If you can take the people out of it and you can streamline it to take the people cost out, not on the service side, I can see that could be quite attractive.
Thank you for that. Any thoughts on that one, Alex?
Yeah, it's not a company I know personally, but I do love Mexican. So I will definitely do some DD on this. And I certainly like those sorts of rollout stories. So, yeah, intriguing. Definitely one that I need to put on the watch list.
Well done again, Henry. Well done, well done. Right, have you got a stock you want to share today with us, Alex?
Yeah.
That you've been looking at over the past week or so.
Well, it's a company that had a trading update at the end of July, so a few weeks ago now, but they'll be having their results very soon. And it's an AIM small cap, 120 million market cap, called Microlise. And the ticker, you're going to like the ticker is SAS, S-A-A-S.
We're lucky to get that.
This is a fleet telematics business. And you're going to ask me, what the hell is fleet telematics? And basically, fleet telematics is the installation of technology, hardware, married with software to enable, for example, the operations manager of a big bread company to more efficiently manage their fleet utilization, which is becoming a real issue. And Microlise IPO'd on AIM 2 years ago. At a price which is a lot higher than the current 120, it's the current share price. And they've never really missed a beat or disappointed. But I think because the CEO has a big holding, the CEO is a fellow called Nadeem Raza, and because it's a little bit off the radar, and it's not a flashy company by any means, it's sort of just drifted. Does about 60 million of revenue, about 8 million of EBITDA. It's got net cash. Unfortunately for Roger, it doesn't pay a dividend because I think it's fair to say it's in growth mode. Works with some big companies, Asda, Warburton, Cemex, anybody that's basically got a big fleet. And it installs quite clever kit. And the kit then sends back data to the nerve center, the operations nerve center of the client. And it can help the companies work out whether their drivers are driving efficiently, whether they're utilizing fuel efficiently, what can be done in terms of maximizing payloads. So it's at the sort of slightly nerdy logistical end of tech, and it's hybrid hardware software. And in terms of the hook, I think the hook is basically you've got about 120 million market cap, and you've got about 45 million of recurring revenue. And if we were to have this podcast 2 or 3 years ago, we would have been hot for stocks with a big ARR, annual recurring revenue. Just in the last year or so, that sort of narrative has slightly fallen by the wayside, and we don't really talk about stocks with ARR at the moment. But I think ARR to me is as good as an annuity revenue stream as you're going to get. It's reliable, it's recurring. You know, as long as your clients don't go bust, it's going to roll in. You know, it's going to roll on year in, year out. So shares, as I say, have been sort of the down year to date, and it's been a bit boring. But they should have interims coming up fairly soon. And I think Microlise and telematics in general as a theme is something that investors should possibly look to get some exposure to. You can imagine, guys, during COVID, when we weren't going anywhere, when we weren't driving, and you know, when the motorways were empty, it was hard for these guys. But as things have opened up, as communication has opened up, as driving has started again, and these guys basically deal with fleet, vehicle fleets, you know, it's a play on sort of improved mobility. Fairly high margins, pretty well established, won a lot of Queen's Awards for enterprise in terms of product innovation. And they're also a small shareholder in a company I know in the Midlands called Trackmate, which is like a sort of little mini-me of... But Microlise, don't get me wrong, is much, much bigger, much better scale than Trackmate. But they are a shareholder in that business. So, yeah. I think that's my stock to flag this week. And they had a decent update back in July. Know the company reasonably well. It's sort of just drifted, really. But I don't think there's anything sinister going on. I think it's more general supply chain slowness rather than anything sinister. They're managing subscriptions for, you know, about 500,000 endpoints in terms of customer subscriptions. That's a big base of customers. So then it's about monetizing those relationships through both hardware and software. So there's a SaaS play, hence the ticker, SaaS, and there's a sort of UK and European rollout play. So yeah, that's the name I'd probably flag. And back to this theme that we keep talking about some of our favorite small and mid caps getting taken out. I mean, Nadeem's a clever fella, and if he doesn't feel the market's giving him the right price, valuing him at the right price, you know, it'll either go private again or he'll look to do a deal and maybe take it off market. Sometimes it's not good to have a big controlling shareholder, but sometimes it is.
Agreed.
And I think in this instance, it probably is. So Microlise, that would be the name I would flag.
Thank you very much for that. And Roger, any of you guys heard of that one, looked at that one in the past? Roger first?
No, new one on me. The only thought that came to mind was kind of spy in the cab, wonder what the drivers think about being monitored. I get my wife giving me feedback on my miles per kilowatt hour when I've driven the electric car, and too much right foot. So I just wonder what the drivers think to that. But as a concept, and I mean, making transport networks more efficient, absolutely, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, there's loads of telematics now in cabs. There's a chap that I know who drives up and down the country, and there's more and more electronics in the cab now than ever. Everything's been monitored, including fatigue. So, yeah, it's some of it's safety, some of it's efficiency. Most of it's efficiency, to be fair. But yeah, it's very, very important, telematics. So yeah, you know, it's a growth industry as well.
Just to chip in, Pete. I mean, it's going to be a play on motor insurance going forward as well, I think.
Good point.
Because I think increasingly motor insurance policies will be priced off telematics and the use of data to analyze driver behavior. Although, just to be clear, Microlise at the moment is a B2B play, not a B2C play. But in general, application of telematics to motor insurance, I think, will be a theme going forward.
Yeah, good point. Sorry, started with the black boxes for all the young speedsters. You know, Henry, you've got a black box in your car, haven't you? I'm joking.
I really like that. That's one of my favourite ones you've mentioned, to be honest with you. that looks like a really interesting business. I love the sector. It's growing really fast. You know, that's one I'm going to go and do some more reading on, I think, after this call.
Oh, well, there you go. Well done. Well done there, Alex. Nice one. I'm going to take a little break now, guys, and mention the Memphis charity, which you good people have made donations to. We've got a guest on here that's been a fantastic donor to the Memphis charities in the past and also on this particular occasion as well. The Memphis charity fundraising that we're doing via this podcast for you kind people who want to make a donation. When you go to www.justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Peaks Challenge 2-3. The total we're sitting at the moment is 2,235. We had a donation from Davey C 2 days ago, and his comments was, really enjoy the podcast, super contributions from Henry and Alex, keep up the good work, sending regards to Wheelie, missing the rhino stories, ha ha, funny face. Davey C donated £25 and £6.25 gift aid. And we had an anonymous individual, no comment, just left us £200 and £50 gift aid. So whoever you are, thank you ever so much. Really, really appreciate your kindness. We carry on going forward and hopefully we'll get some donations for the people that have listened to this podcast and the other 107 before it, who can make a donation. We'd really appreciate it. And as I always say, if you haven't subscribed yet, please, please, please just go and just hit the subscribe button on the channels that you're on, but also on the YouTube channel. Find us on YouTube via the Conquest Corner podcast channel and you'll find us there. So please, please subscribe. I want to move back now to Roger. Roger, I'm going to mention the stock. I'm not being biased now, but it's a Sheffield-based stock, right? And it's come out this week and it said, which is what the words that Alex hates, going to delist. Now, this is a company I'm sure Henry also knows of because of him being in the infrastructure space. But this is Fulcrum Utility Services, a Sheffield-based firm. And it's gone, nah, we're done. We're moving on. We're leaving the market. So it still does it. Designs, builds, and owns and maintains utility infrastructure. And basically it's saying the revenues are down to 50 million quid. We're showing a massive loss of 25 million quid. It's been really, really difficult for us over the past few years. In 2018, the share price was at 70 pence per share. On the 21st, which is 2 days ago, Monday, it decided, nah, we're done. We're going to delist. The shares fell 60%, right? From above or just shy of 1 pence to 0.33 pence, so less than half a penny. But it's going to leave another one that's going to leave the AIM market. So what we're to do with, we've got so many good things coming out of Sheffield, apart from the football teams. What we're going to do with the manufacturing side of the country, the tech side of the country up north, what we're to do, mate?
It's a difficult environment, isn't it? I just think the cost structure is bad. Energy is super expensive. I mean, political minefield if we get into net zero, but it doesn't come for free. We all think it's the right thing to do. We all want solar panels on our roof, but none of it is free. And for a manufacturing economy, it's not a great place to be these days. And you can say that for all of Europe. I mean, the chemical industry in Europe, what a painful place to be. Energy costs, labor costs, regulation, the green sort of tariff on business in Europe is really tough. And we're heading towards sort of a post-industrial era, really.
I hope we're not. I'm hoping we've got a few more legs there because there's so many jobs. You're in the industry. You know there's so many jobs linked to the chemical engineering industry and the manufacturing of the middle of the country. The manufacturing side of it is huge. We need these costs to come down to maintain people's employment. The cost of living crisis is already happening. More people lose their jobs. We're going to have a real situation going on, I think.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I hadn't realised that they were a Sheffield-based company, actually. And I've realised, like my choice of football team, it's not a good bias to have, actually. It just leads to heartache. so I've seen Zoo not do terribly well for me. I saw Pressure Technologies do fantastically and then undo fantastically. One disco goes without saying. That's not been that's one of your holdings, I think, actually, Pete, isn't it?
It's one of my holdings, but I'm hoping it'll come back and transition. There's plenty of time left for them to do so. But yeah,
so again, that's another
I'm a bit
home
biased
bias.
There because of the I'm biased towards them because of the CEO and the team that he's put together. I've got a huge respect for Stephen Kelly. In 2 or 3 years' time, I'm hoping that he'll be sitting there going, taking a breath, because he's working his socks. Him and the team are working the socks off to get things right. So we'll see. But there's plenty of good companies come out of Sheffield, and there's going to be more to come. Startups, there's loads. We've got a fantastic hub of startups now as well. So yeah, lots going on in Sheffield. So I wouldn't worry about.
I'd like to thank ITM, just to give them a shout out, for right at the cutting edge of sort of hydrogen electrolyzers. I mean, that is a company with world-class technology. Had hiccups in the road again, but yeah. I do think that's definitely cutting-edge stuff where we can lead the world.
We need the investment as well. We need the survived on grants and UK money so far. They need to actually just generate some revenues, mate. I think they've been there for a little while, so you know, hopefully they'll get there in the next 12 months. But yeah, be interesting to see how they get on. So yeah. Right. Henry, have you got another stock for us, mate? And if so, can it be a UK one, please?
I'm going to let you down on that. I've got another US one. But
you
it is one
calling
that you're
UK,
going to like.
US Henry. Yeah, go on. Carry on. Go on.
It is one you're going to like. So it's Medpace Holdings. MEDP is the ticker.
Okay, go
£6
for it.
£6 billion market cap provider of clinical research and medical device development services. They provide what they describe as scientifically driven outsourced clinical development services to the biotechnology, pharmaceutical and medical device industries. So they've got a huge, huge range of bioanalytical laboratory services, clinical human pharmacology, human imaging services, and electrocardiography support for clinical trials. They are based in North America, but they've also got operations in Europe and Asia. They've grown their earnings per share again every year since 2017, and are forecast to grow, I think it's about 15% next year. They're buying back shares at 3% a year. And they've just had their Q2 trading updates come out, where they beat their revenue forecast. They were forecast to do about $460 million. They were forecast to do $433 million, and they actually did $460 million. So this is a business, you know, if you like your healthcare type companies, you like your biotechnology, they're not necessarily an AstraZeneca or a GSK. They're not necessarily producing their own medicines, but they are providing services for others to undertake the trials to produce medicines. I thought it was in quite an interesting space. It's one that listeners may want to go and do a little bit of research on to get some exposure to that healthcare side of the market.
Okay, did you say what the main side of the market is for them, Henry?
The size or the side?
No, the main scope of the business, what they're involved in.
It's
did you say that?
Clinical research and medical device development.
The imaging side. Okay. Clinical research, yeah. Because I think what the interesting side of that is that obviously a lot of the larger entities are outsourcing that side of it. That's been the scheme, hasn't it? It's like, we don't want to do the dirty work. Get it through phase one and phase two for us, and then we'll deal with phase three sort of thing. So yeah, so it's a very, very interesting one. And again, I feel embarrassed that it's one of them I've never heard of, you know, given the size of it as well. You know, and this is the embarrassing, this goes back to what Alex is saying. It's embarrassing. We've got a 7 billion, did you say 7 billion or 6 billion
6
market
billion.
Cap? 6 billion market cap company, so the equivalent of 5.5-6 billion here. If that was, that would be a FTSE 100 company here, right? And we haven't got a Scooby, I haven't got a Scooby Doo what it is, what it does, what the ticker is. Never heard of it. So yeah, I'm putting it down. I've tipped my hat to you. It's another one I'm gonna have to go in and do some reading on and check out. Thank you ever so much for sharing that with us. Chaps, I'm conscious that we've had Roger on here for an hour, and we're now going to indulge him, right? I'm sorry, we're going to have to do it. There's cricket fans here, there's football fans here. He's a football fan, so we're going to have to indulge him because he's been polite enough to come on and grace us with his presence to share his love of Sheffield, which club it is and why. Come on, Rog. Come on, this is your moment. Why should everyone support your footy team?
It's the finest, obviously. It's Sheffield United. So based in the heart of the city. So it's maybe not the oldest club, but it's definitely the finest. The first ground to hold a floodlit match. The only ground that's held a test match as well as a football match. It's held an FA Cup final as well as a cricket match. So, and of course, they're proudly in the Premier League now. Might not last very long, but...
Roger, what's the story behind that cricket match? Did they used to play cricket at Bramall Lane or...?
Yes. So Bramall Lane was a cricket ground that Yorkshire used to play at.
Okay.
Eventually, they built the south stand on the outfield. So three sides of the ground were cricket, were stands for the football match. And then they had a big outfield, which is now a car park with a stand built across it. So for many years, the old pavilion used to sit at the back of the car park. But it eventually got demolished.
Right. Okay.
Amazing. Yeah. I am pretty certain we had this conversation. I'm pretty certain I'll have to check when I speak to Phil tomorrow that he's also a Sheffield United fan because that's where he's brought up and raised as a young man. I'll have to double check.
Many men and women of taste around the country.
I was going to say the opposite. But yeah. Yeah.
All points of view to make a market, obviously.
Listen, I've no longer got a football team because mine's Oldham. I live in Leicestershire, but mine's Oldham. And where are we? We're in the old Conference League, mate. We're out of the leagues now. Yeah. Non-league. It's just embarrassing. Mm. But, you have to stick with your home team, don't you? You can't just become a Man United fan overnight or a Man City fan like some of these, I won't use the name I normally use. Anyway. All right. Roger, thank you ever so much for coming on here with us, mate. You've made 108 very, very interesting indeed. And I'm sure some of the things that you shared, lots of our listeners will appreciate, So thank you ever so much.
Thank you for the invite. I was amazed to be invited. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been fantastic.
You should be amazed, mate. Kindness begets kindness. So here you are. So thank you ever so much for coming on. Right. So 108 is complete, ladies and gents. Go and follow Roger on at Roger Green 2009. And he will keep telling you when he gets down to 89, 75 and 50 stocks and investment funds, et cetera, going forward. And also he attends lots of AGMs and goes to shows. So he'll tell you what those are like as well. And hopefully we'll hear more from you, Roger. Thank you ever so much, sir, for joining us. It's been an absolute delight. Thank you ever so much, Henry. Thank you, sir. And thank you, Alex.
Thank you, guys.
That will be it. Again. Ladies and gents, subscribe, follow, and give us your feedback of this show. And we'll look forward to hearing from you soon. Take care. God bless. Have a wonderful bank holiday weekend. Get the beers in.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
Enjoy. Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.